Ekatra Podcast Conversations, for the curious, essential knowledge, simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome back to The Deep Dive. Today we are tackling a technology that's seen a lot of hype and maybe some confusion too, 3D printing.
Yeah, definitely. If you've heard phrases like magic replicator, well, you're exactly who we want to chat with today.
We're using John M. Jordan's book, 3D Printing, History, Hype, and Impact as our guide.
Yeah.
It's a really solid analysis.
It is, because this subject, additive manufacturing as it's also known, it gets sensationalized constantly. So
yeah.
Our mission really is to cut through all that noise
right.
And give you a realistic, you know, a solid foundation of what this tech actually is, where it came from, and importantly, why it's shaking things up in industries, not just like in garages.
And Jordan says the absolute key concept, the thing you have to get, is this core shift in how we make things.
Mm-hmm.
Moving from subtractive methods.
Right, cutting away.
To additive methods. Building up. And that pivot, that changes pretty much everything about design, distribution, how we even think about physical objects.
Exactly. That simple difference, how stuff gets made, that's the key that unlocks this whole story.
So maybe let's talk about the author, John M. Jordan. Who is he?
Okay, so he's a clinical associate professor at Penn State, but his background is really crucial here. He's in science, technology, and society, STS.
Ah, okay. And that's why this book feels different, isn't it? It's not just an engineer talking about specs.
Precisely. He's looking at the whole network. It's not just the hardware, the printer itself.
Mm.
He sees 3D printing as a cultural thing, an economic force.
And all the legal debates swirling around it, too.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So he gives this really balanced, critical view. He's like a historian and a social analyst rolled into one.
Watching how the media talks about it, how society reacts.
Right. So we get the full picture, not just the, you know, the shiny gadget view.
Makes sense. So what's the book's main argument then? What's he saying overall?
Well, basically, Jordan argues that 3D printing isn't some bolt from the blue. It didn't just suddenly appear.
Right.
It's actually this complex system, part tech, part social, and it's been evolving for quite a while. It has surprisingly deep roots.
And the really disruptive part, according to him, isn't necessarily the printer.
No, not primarily. It's the whole digital ecosystem around it. You know, the CAD software for designing.
The programs that slice the model up.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the fact that you can just send these digital blueprints anywhere in the world instantly. That's where the value is shifting to the digital file itself.
Okay. So the book takes us on that journey.
Yeah, it really walks you through it. Mm. Starts by tackling the hype head on,
mm-hmm.
then dives into this like 30-year history, which is fascinating, explains the tech process clearly, shows off some genuinely game-changing applications.
Like in aerospace and medicine, I bet.
Absolutely. And then, importantly, it doesn't shy away from the tough stuff, the challenges, IP issues, quality control, ethics.
So it covers a lot of ground. Tech, history, real-world uses, the social impact.
Yeah, from additive versus subtractive to things like the ReprApp open source movement, big companies like GE, communities like Enable, and these huge questions about supply chains and intellectual property.
Okay, let's dig into some of those specifics.
Yeah.
Starting with that hype, Jordan says calling it the third industrial revolution is what? Premature.
Yeah, premature, possibly even misleading. He sees it less as a sudden break, more as a significant evolution of digital manufacturing. Tools and ideas that have actually been developing for decades.
Right, building on what came before.
Exactly, and that brings us back to that core idea, additive versus subtractive.
Okay, explain that simply.
Right, so subtractive is the old way. Think of a sculptor with a block of marble. You start with a big chunk and you carve, you cut material away until you get your statue. Lots of waste material left over.
Got it, like whittling wood.
Perfect analogy.
Yeah.
Now, additive is the total opposite. It's like, well, you said digital Legos earlier, and that's pretty good.
Okay.
You start with nothing and you add material, layer by tiny layer, precisely where you need it until the object is finished.
And the big advantage there is?
Complexity. You can create intricate internal structures, hollow parts, things inside the object that you literally cannot make by cutting away from the outside. That's the conceptual key.
Okay, that makes sense. And this isn't new tech, you said? It goes way back.
Way back. Jordan points out the origins are in the 1980s.
Wow.
Guys like Chuck Hull invented stereolithography, SLA, back in 84. But, you know, for years, it was super expensive, tied up in patents, mostly hidden away in R&D labs.
The 80s? That's before most people even had a home computer.
Yeah.
So the current buzz feels almost delayed.
It kind of does. And the real catalyst, the big shift, wasn't some brand new machine invention. It was actually legal. In the mid-2000s, some of those foundational patents expired, and that just blew the doors open.
Okay.
It allowed things like the open source RipRap project to happen.
That's the printer that prints itself, right?
Well, prints a lot of its own parts, yeah.
Yeah.
And that project just massively dropped the cost and the accessibility. It basically kickstarted the whole maker movement we see today, putting this capability into ordinary people's hands.
Amazing. So let's demystify the how. How does a print actually happen? Jordan breaks it down.
Yeah, into three basic stages. First is modeling. You need a digital design. So you either use CAD, software computer-aided design, to create it from scratch, or maybe you use a 3D scanner.
Okay, so you get the 3D blueprint. Then what?
Then comes slicing. This is sort of the crucial translation step. Software takes your smooth 3D model and slices it virtually into hundreds or thousands of really thin horizontal layers.
Like a CT scan of the object.
Exactly like that. And then it generates the instructions for the printer, step by step, layer by layer. That's usually called G-code. Think of it as the printer's specific script.
Got it. Model, slice, and then print.
Then printing. And there are different ways this happens. The one most people see on desktops is FDM fused deposition modeling.
That's the plastic filament one.
Right.
Yeah, basically a very precise computer controlled hot glue gun melting and placing plastic layer by layer. But there are others, like SLA, which uses UV light to harden liquid resin.
Okay.
Or SLS, which fuses powder together with a laser. But the core idea is always the same. Build it up layer by layer, following that digital G-code script.
And the payoff for all this is that complexity advantage you mentioned.
Yes, that's where it really shines. Look at the GE Aviation LEAP fuel nozzle case study in the book.
Okay.
It's a critical part in a jet engine. Used to be made by assembling like 20 different little pieces, really fiddly.
Right.
Now, they 3D print it as one single, incredibly complex part.
And the result?
Get this. It's 25% lighter, which is huge in aerospace, and 5 times more durable.
Wow.
That's just, it's a capability traditional manufacturing can't match for that kind of part.
That's seriously impressive. And you mentioned a humanitarian angle, too.
Yeah, the eNable community. It's this amazing global network. Volunteers design and 3D print functional prosthetic hands customized for kids who need them.
Oh.
And they donate them. It perfectly shows that decentralized idea. The design files get shared digitally anywhere in the world.
And the actual making, the printing, happens locally, right where it's needed.
Exactly. On demand.
But it's not all positive, right?
Yeah.
Jordan talks about the downsides, the controversies.
Oh, definitely. He makes sure we see that too. The biggest headache is probably intellectual property, IP.
Right.
He uses this really potent phrase. He compares it to a Napster moment for physical things.
Ooh, okay, I get that. If you can scan an object, turn it into a digital file, and share it online.
Yeah, how do designers, how do companies protect their work? How do they protect the value when the blueprint can just be copied infinitely?
And this blew up with a 3D printed gun issue, didn't it?
Absolutely. The Cody Wilson Liberator pistol case, that really brought it to a head. It's this intense clash between, you know, the right to share information, free speech arguments around the digital file.
Versus the very real public safety concerns about anyone being able to print an untraceable firearm at home.
Exactly. It poses these incredibly tough questions for regulation, for law enforcement. Who controls the factory when the factory is just code you download?
Yeah, tricky stuff. And beyond IP and guns, are there other issues?
Sure. Things like quality control. Can you guarantee a printed part is safe or reliable? Material limitations. You can't print everything yet. The range of materials is still growing.
And environmental impact. I imagine all that plastic.
Yeah, especially in the hobbyist space, there's plastic waste from failed prints. And the energy consumption of the printers themselves is also a factor to consider. It's not a perfectly clean tech.
Okay, so let's try to pull out some of the main themes from the book. What are the big takeaways?
I think the biggest one, the one he hammers home, is the primacy of the digital file.
Right, we keep coming back to that.
Because that's the real disruption. Turning a physical thing into a digital blueprint that you can share, edit, transmit instantly. That's what's shifting the power away from the traditional factory floor. The value moves to the design itself.
Which means, like you said about Napster, if you have the file, you basically own the means of production for that object.
Pretty much. It forces designers and companies to think about digital piracy for physical goods, which is a whole new world.
Okay, theme one.
Mm.
The file is king. What else?
Second theme. It's not a replacement, but a complement. 3D printing isn't going to suddenly wipe out mass production lines making millions of identical items.
Not yet, anyway.
Right. It excels where mass production struggles. Things like short runs, prototypes, highly customized items, or those super complex shapes we talked about.
So it's the perfect tool for, say, a custom hearing aid fitted exactly to your ear, or a unique replacement part for an old car.
Exactly.
But not for making cheap plastic cups by the million.
Precisely. It fills specific niches incredibly well.
Got it. Complement, not replacement. And a third theme.
He emphasizes thinking of it as a socio-technical system, meaning the impact isn't just about the printer hardware. It's shaped by everything around it, the software people use, the online communities, like Thingiverse, where designs get shared.
The legal rules, how the media portrays it.
Right, the skills people have.
Yeah.
All these things interact and evolve together. It's the whole ecosystem.
So you can't just look at the machine in isolation. You have to see the network, the people, the rules, the digital infrastructure surrounding it to really get it.
That's the idea.
Jordan seems to have a knack for summing these things up. Are there some standout quotes or ideas from the book?
Yeah, there are a few really crisp ones. He says something like, 3D printing doesn't just change how we make things. It changes what we can make and who can make it.
Oh, I like that. Captures the complexity and the democratization part.
Exactly. And then reinforcing that main theme, the most disruptive aspect is the digital file. Just cuts right to the chase.
Mm-hmm.
He also explains the economics really well. Customization becomes economically viable when the cost of complexity approaches zero.
Yeah. That explains why it works for things like personalized medical implants, where that complexity is the whole point.
Right. The printer doesn't care if it's making a simple block or a really intricate shape. The cost is roughly similar, unlike traditional methods.
And that Napster comparison again.
Yeah. The debate over the 3D printed gun represents a Napster moment for physical things. It's just such a powerful way to frame the IP and regulatory challenge. Really makes you think.
It does. Okay, so bringing it down to earth a bit,
What
are the real life applications for listeners right now? How might this actually touch their lives?
Well, for someone just curious, maybe a hobbyist, it's about empowerment, right? Becoming a creator.
Yeah.
You can download a design for, say, a replacement knob for your dishwasher that you can't buy anymore, print it out, fix it yourself. Or design unique little tools for around the house. It fosters a kind of self-sufficiency.
That's cool. What about for professionals, engineers, designers?
Oh, for them, it's huge for rapid prototyping. Design something, print it overnight, test it the next day, find flaws, tweak the design, print it again.
Cuts down development time massively, I bet.
Hugely. It accelerates innovation like crazy. They call it design for additive manufacturing, thinking of design possibilities differently because you know you can print complex shapes.
And in medicine, you mentioned implants.
Yeah, personalized medicine's a big one. Doctors using CT scans to print patient-specific surgical guides, helping them operate more precisely.
Oh.
Or creating those custom-fit implants perfectly matched to an individual's body.
Okay. And then the big picture for businesses or governments.
The big strategic idea Jordan highlights is distributed manufacturing.
Making things closer to where they're needed.
Exactly. Instead of one giant factory overseas, maybe you have smaller local printing hubs making things on demand. That could totally change supply chains, reduce shipping costs, cut down on warehousing huge inventories. It's a potential paradigm shift.
Lots to think about there. Okay, final thoughts. As we wrap up, what's one thing that really stuck with you or surprised you from Jordan's analysis?
For me, honestly, it was probably that deep history. Realizing the stuff started bubbling up in the 80s, it reframes the current excitement.
Yeah.
And understanding that the real revolution isn't just printing stuff, it's this underlying shift towards making highly complex, highly customized things practical and economical, often on demand, that feels profound.
Mm. For me, I think it was the balanced perspective.
Mm.
Acknowledging the incredible power and potential.
Right.
But also being really clear-eyed about the current limits, the hype, and the serious challenges like IP and regulation.
Mm-hmm.
It's not presented as a magic wand.
No, definitely not.
And the lasting thought maybe is that understanding the whole system,
mm-hmm.
the software, the sharing, the legal stuff, the digital literacy, is just as vital, maybe even more vital, than just owning the printer itself.
Well said. Hopefully this dive gives everyone a more grounded, nuanced view of what 3D printing really is and where it might be going.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.